Previously on Solve the World.
She made 1,000 inquiries into who this shining man was. Jen was convinced, beyond any doubt, that this had to be Pied Piper. He was the monster under every bed, the vision beyond every dream. He was her nemesis. Jen knew it. She could feel it. It was the only thing that made sense, that even in her running, even in her following the Lost Boy to Liechtenstein, she'd fall back into the Piper's snare. He was everywhere. He was in everything. He was the cook behind every death. He was the author behind every mystical fantasy. Solve the World, a fictional adventure told in 100 episodes.
Once upon a time, in the beginning.
Episode 79, The Talk. Chuck Klosterman writes books that tend to be just a collection of essays, usually within a specific parameter of discussion. He wrote, for instance, I Wear the Black Hat, wherein Mr. Klosterman examines what makes villains villains, as well as the untapped grounds of what makes the bad guys so cool. Why is the Joker infinitely more interesting than Batman? Another book of Klosterman's is entitled Eating the Dinosaur, and begins with a series of interviews with interviewers about the concept of interviewing. Ira Glass, famed NPR radio man personality and renowned journalist and interviewer in his own right, is quoted as saying the following in Klosterman's book. Quote, most people are not articulate about everything in their life, but they're articulate about the things they're still figuring out. Unquote. The one we called the Pied Piper went to a bar once a year. He chose a different bar every year. He'd gone on some weeknight, in the deep hours when all but the loneliest of drinkers were already snug in bed. Bars have been around in some form or another, in practically every culture on Earth, since the beginning of time. It had never been hard for the Piper to find a new bar to slip into. One night, over a decade before the events outside of Onmo, before the death march to Black Henge at the Earth's northern tip, this one, Mr. Pied Piper, snuck into a small bar in an undistinguished town in eastern Nebraska on a Tuesday evening. He was unaware of the boy that followed him silently. The boy would hear the old fife player's ramblings in full that evening. For the first time, the young boy would know the whole story. He would understand the narrative of his adopted father. The boy, bought and paid for from a secret genius list, lived with the Piper. The old man had taken the boy in as some kind of apprentice. The boy, known to us as Miles Faw, was often rebellious. He didn't understand the Piper's thoughts and actions. That's why spying on him was so necessary. After hearing the Piper's story, though, Faw's period of teen angst and childhood rebellion would be subdued in full. At the bar, wherein four drunkards remained, Piper chose a seat next to the one man who didn't sit at the bar, but rather sat slumped over at a table, his overweight body and displeasing aroma scaring off any potential table sharers up until this moment. Piper swiped in on the man.
Hello,
he said. Nah, the drunkard croaked.
I'll buy you a beer if I can share this space with you. How does that sound?
No.
You drive a hard bargain. 3 beers. That's my final offer.
No response from the blank-faced inebriate.
4. Very good. It's settled, then.
Piper motions for the bartender. He tarries over.
Yes, good sir. My friend and I would like 8 beers, please, and I would like additionally a tall glass of absinthe.
I can't do that. 1 beer at a time.
Let's say I'm expecting company, and I'd like to greet my friends with beer already poured.
Piper held up a bundle of $100 bills to the barkeep.
I don't like to be bothered in the middle of telling a story.
Absinthe? I can't do that, either. The bartender said this coyly, clearly showing his cards. He could be bought. And he was. Piper reached into his pocket and pulled out another bundle of rubber-banded $100 bills. The bartender smirked, realizing for the first time in his adult life that he was the type of character that could be bought out. Oh well.
I'm going to tell you a story,
Piper said to the drunkard.
I don't want you to interrupt me. You can tell this story to whomever you please. In fact, I adjure you, please pass it on.
Adieu? Adieu? Adore? Adore? Adieu?
The drunkard repeated.
Yes, my friend. I adjure you.
Adjure?
Adjure.
Adjure. Adjure.
Yes, adjure. That's right. Very good. This isn't going to be a back and forth. I speak, you listen, no comments.
What's that mean? You want me to shut up?
I want you to be who you are, but to be so silently. When I was young, I had the world.
The bartender returned with a serving tray and 8 beers. He shelved them out, the 8 beers fully cramping their diminutive table. Lastly, the waiter plunked the glass of absinthe directly in front of the Pied Piper. Will that be all? Neither the Piper nor the drunkard responded. After a moment's hesitation, the bartender returned to the friendly confines of his walkway behind the bar stools and bar itself, a protective sheath from whatever this rich young ruler was about to dole out. Have I mentioned that before? Despite Piper's age, his visage was young. He looks 22, 23 at the most. The drunkard himself is merely 26, but looks closer to 46 on this evening. The two represent your quintessential odd couple. Piper takes his absinthe, meticulously pouring the spirit little by little into each of his 4 beers. He's slow and methodical with his doling out of absinthe, paying close attention to ensure an equal dose to each beer. He doesn't want one to be more zangy than the others. At last, it's time to begin. Piper takes his first big gulp of absinthe-laced beer and commences.
When I was young, I had the world. Everyone looked up to me. When I was young, there wasn't anyone to fight. I didn't have plans. It didn't enter my mind to think up schemes. Everything was good. There were no rainy days. And there was no famine. The world was happy. I was happy. In those days, I had this friend. Just this good friend that I would go on walks with. We'd talk about all sorts of things. He taught me, showed me, how to be a good conversationalist, how to really go somewhere when you're sharing ideas with another person. You see how this world's gone. Sure you do.
Piper sneered at the drunkard. This was not time for agreements or invectives. This was shut-up time for the lowlife. Listen, take in. That was the stranger's job.
Yes, well, no one knows how to communicate anymore. It's all just like this, except disguised. That's the difference between me and this new generation. I may not be having a genuine conversation, but at least I'm not fooling myself. Everything these days is just diatribes, self-masturbatory monologues hidden within the confines of a quote conversation. You know how annoying that is? How sad?
A flailing of hands indicating that the drunkard was still not to respond. The Piper's question remained merely a rhetorical one.
This is not a conversation, because you have nothing to offer me. Your insights, your novel ideas, your next great American novel drivel. I've hashed, rehashed, and triple-hashed through every experience you think you alone have suffered through. Jobs and girls, that's all you men talk about. But, my friend, when we walked through the garden, under the big terebinth, that was something unlike anything you'll ever know. And the worst of it is, the dagger in my heart is that our conversations were give and take. It wasn't just him teaching me. I wasn't like you. I should have been. My friend was far superior to me. I am who I am because of him. But somehow, I think he was surprised by what I had to say. We were in love in that way. You wouldn't understand.
I see.
Idiot. We're walking, my friend and I, one glorious morning, and he says to me, "You see that giraffe?" He didn't use those words, of course. We had a different lexicon back then, but I can't remember the words. The words. What a pity. I say to my friend, "Yes, I see that giraffe." He says, "Do you like it?" I say, "Of course. I love that giraffe so much. It was a gorgeous creature." He says, "I made that giraffe." I ask my friend. I say, "You're different than me?" He replies something like, "Do I look like you or the giraffe?" Well, he's my friend. He's got 2 feet, 2 arms, a mouth, just like me. So I say, "Friend, you look like me." He responds, "I made that giraffe, but I'm giving you dominion over it." You know that word, dominion? It's a powerful word. It means many things. This is what I say next. It's interesting. Listen. I say, "If I'm like you, then I can make a giraffe too." My friend was such a tease. He gives me this enigmatic answer. "Our walk has come to an end for now. I will come and walk with you tomorrow," or something like that. You get the gist of it. Instead of answering the question, he left me alone with my own thoughts.
Piper takes a huge swig, bowling down nearly half a pint in one foul swoop.
Now here's the thing. The way things were back then are not the way things are now. That's what I'm trying to explain to you. Go see for yourself. Look outside if you have to.
There's a window behind the drunkard. He swirls around to take a look out. It's pitch black. He doesn't see anything. He doesn't spy Miles Faw hiding and taking in every lick of the story Piper slowly unfolding.
"You see any giraffes out there?" "Of course not. That's my point. The world's different now. I'm left alone. My friend's gone. So I start talking to the giraffe. Patting, massaging its fur. That sort of thing. Don't hear me wrong. I'm not saying this was a magical land where all the animals talked. No. No, 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 no. It wasn't follow the yellow brick road land or anything like that. The giraffe didn't talk back to me. Talking was different back then anyway. Wasn't like it is now. It was more inherent, somehow. Like something you're born with. Now it's all learnt. It's super duper grammatical and split into thousands of languages and millions of dialects. Ugh. It's enough to bust a light upstairs, you know what I mean?"
Piper says as he knocks on his noggin.
"I'm there. In the garden, or wherever, brushing my giraffe, which, don't forget, I have dominion over. And this is, like, true dominion for realsies. I'm brushing away, thinking to myself, I'm just like my friend. That's what he meant, right? I'm just like him, I'm just like him. That means I can make my own giraffe, right? This is what I'm thinking to myself, so I do. Almost. I'm thinking about what makes this giraffe a giraffe, you know? What makes this giraffe different from the hippopotamus? There's physical differences, of course, but there's also personality ones, identity differences. So you'll never believe this. I create. I form somehow in my mind, my bowels, whatever, my innermost parts. I make a giraffe. That's funny, right? He's not quite the same, though, this giraffe. I feel it right away when I create. I'm giving something up. I'm changed in that way. This giraffe man, the first of my creation, he's beautiful, polite, slow to speak, kind. There's a little less of those things in me now. The next day, I'm walking with my friend. My giraffe man is walking beside us. I ask him what he thinks of him. He says he feels fine. I say, "Do you see this giraffe man?" He says, "Of course." I say, "I give him to your dominion." My friend smiles at me. And then, do you know what he does next? He comes right up to my creation. The giraffe man bows his long neck to my friend so that their heads are inches apart. It's a precious moment. It should have been made into one of those little statue things that they sell. You know, where the little kid statues of, have the big eyes, like the one where a little boy is dressed up like a doctor and has his stethoscope in his ears, listening to a globe that has band-aids all over it. If the guys that make those things saw my friend and the giraffe guy, they'd eat their own hearts out with their lovey-doveys. My friend whispers at my creation, responding to whatever he said. The giraffe thing smiles. Really, believe me, he smiles and then runs off like a kid running out to recess. Naturally, I turned to my friend. I said, "Hey, friend, what did you tell my creation?" He says, "You gave him into my dominion, so I freed him." I wasn't sure what that meant exactly, but my giraffe man seemed happy, and my friend seemed pleased about the whole situation. We walked in peace, and I was happy. After we finished our walk, I decided to create some more. I thought that instead of just creating a giraffe man, I would make something really new. After all, that's what my friend did, right? Created new things. So I wanted to create new creatures, creatures like no one had ever seen. But here's the thing. Your generation doesn't seem to understand this. With your internet and your cell phones and your new movies, you all think that your generation is a nation of newness. People wait in line for the newest Apple phone because they believe deep down that the newest phone is something that's just being born, a newness into the earthly realm. Nope, that's not how it goes. Solomon was very, very right. There's nothing new under the sun. Even me, all those days ago, back when I walked with my friend in the gardens, I couldn't do new. New isn't something humans have the ability to do. All that we can do is mimic and blend. Mimicking is the easy part to understand. My friend made a giraffe, so I made a giraffe. Mimicry. Simple. But after that comes blending. That evening, as I lay by a cool creek bed, I thought, I want to create an icicle that's also like me. A mansicle, if you will. So I did. I made that day a frost giant. I showed it to my friend, and he seemed happy. Every day I walked with my friend, I gave him dominion over my creature. And then he set the creature free. Everyone was happy. We turned it into a little formula. For a long time, this went on. I created little people, rock people, sky people, mermaids, cat people, changelings, hobbits, all sorts of things. My friend liked them all. Don't forget, every time I created, I felt like I'd given more and more of myself away. In some sense, I was less than I was in the beginning. On the other hand, I was so happy to see what happiness I had made. It was worth it. One day, I asked my friend about this giving in creation feeling. We walked in the cool breeze, and I asked, "Since you're like me, but you have created many more animals than I have, are you less now than you were before?" He answered me directly. I gotta give him that. He said, "This is our distinction. You are me. You are the stuff of me. But I go on and on. You are finite." That's what he said. You get it? He's never ending. I was.
Another big chug of absinthe and beer.
I did something that evening. I thought to myself, I want a friend, just like my current friend, but I want him to be just like me. If I'm not never-ending, I want him to be un-never-ending.
The Piper stopped in his tracks.
I know what you're thinking. Go ahead, say it.
Why wouldn't you make a chick? The drunkard croaked.
Yes, precisely. The answer is because I didn't know any chicks yet. How could I make what I didn't know? If I knew about them, I would make them. Rest assured, my son. Have no fear, but I didn't know about them.
There weren't any around?
There weren't any around.
There's never any around me either. Sad. Sad.
Yes, right. So, I decided to make for myself a true friend. But I knew this would cost me. Every time I created, I gave a piece of myself away. So if I wanted a true best friend who walked and talked and ate and laughed just like me, then I needed to give more of myself away than ever before. And I did. I cut myself in two. Half of all that I was, I gave, with one exception. I couldn't bear to part with any of my memories. I loved my memories. I cherished them like the stars in the heavens. After all my memories were love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, forbearance, goodness, faithfulness, even self-control. Walking with my friend, it took self-control in my soul not to ask my friend to walk longer with me each day. I learned to be full with our walks each day. These were the essence of my memories. And I didn't want to part with them, so I held them back from my creation. When he first came into being, he was beautiful, more radiant than anything you've ever seen, even more marvelous, in my eyes, than my original friend. This new friend, the last of my creation, was the best thing I'd ever done. In those first moments, when air first came into his lungs, I gave him his first name. You know what that name is? Hillel. That's the Hebrew name. I've forgotten it in my original tongue. Hillel means shining one. There wasn't anything I'd seen that was brighter than my finite friend. Hillel in Greek is Heosphorus. You probably know it better in Latin. This word you do. Lucifer.
The Piper downed another beer.
I did. A selfish thing after I made my shining man. I hid him. I kept him from my friend. He asked me the next day. He said, "Adam, did you make anything yesterday?" I lied to my friend. That's what I did. I lied and said, "No." And you know what happened next.
The drunkard's eyes were glassy. He'd finished 3.5 beers and appeared to have checked out of the momentary reality.
"My friend in the garden said to me," he said, "I think you would do well with a companion. person just like you in almost every way. Then the three of us can go walking together. When we are not walking, you'll have each other. I said, how will this person be just like me? He answered, I'll make her out of you. He put me to sleep, and that's when he made Lilith.
Note: the name Lilith is the official name of Eve in this story. Eve is a title, not a first name. Just as the Pied Piper was a man, Lilith was an Eve. Or, less confusingly, Lilith was a woman. Any correlation between Lilith Babbitt and Adam's wife is left for you to reckon with yourself.
We had our differences, but she gets a bad rap, let me tell you.
Piper stared at his remaining glasses of beer for a considerably long amount of time. The drunkard, during this interlude, counted sheep. Eventually, the Pied Piper arose from his stupor.
She's not bad. She's not bad. Not fair, but nothing is. Nothing is. The story, dear drinking buddy, is not like it's remembered. Not at all like it's written. Sure, those elements might be there, probably are, but that's not what matters. Not to me. Who cares about some fruit off of a tree? You think nudity is a big deal? I don't care about that stuff. The Shining Man doesn't care about that stuff. Certainly Lilith didn't care about that stuff. The important stuff was always about creation and creating.
Another swig.
One day after our walk, the Shining Man pops out of the woods. He's frowning. He says, I tried to create, but I can't. This confused me. I could create. And he's an exact halfling of me. Half of me, half of my stuff is his stuff. So why couldn't he do what I did? On the morrow's walk, I tried to be cunning. I said to my friend, can my frost giant create minions? Can he create as I created? My friend replied, honestly, he said, you have been bestowed attributes. These are the things you have a tendency to do, have a proclivity to enjoy, to succeed at. There are those things, and then there's your identity. I remember this part clearly, maybe more clearly than anything else. He said, your identity is in me. You can't divide it up. You can't share it. I told the Shining Man all this. I watched his eyes as I told him. He took in the intelligence, gathered the information. The next day I saw him. He had made something. Not like I made things, not like I made him, somewhere deep inside with intuition. That's not what he did. He made something by pulling bark off of trees, wrapping it around sticks, and then creating a mesh area, intertwining stalks of grass, something similar to a modern tennis racket. The Shining Man said it was an identity catcher. I asked him whose identity he would catch. He didn't have an answer yet. I think he didn't yet know about death. We didn't, Lilith and I. But slowly he worked on Lilith, the Shining Man. Spending time with him, she said, was like spending time with me. My friend left us. He didn't like that I hid the Shining Man from him. That hurt. That hurt so much, and I know it hurt Lilith. I stopped talking to the Shining Man. I was mad at him. I guess it wasn't his fault that I hid him from my friend, but he shouldn't have seduced Lilith like he did. He saw himself as my equal. That shouldn't have been the case. We were not the same. My friend made Lilith for me, not him. She was to be my companion. He could find other companions, the rock goblins or the flying men. Anyone but Lilith. Unfortunately, all of it. Unfortunate. Unfortunate. All of it unfortunate. For a long time, we didn't see him around. Lilith and I kept to ourselves. We learned about children. First Cain, then Abel, then Seth, then more. The giraffe died. We made clothes out of him.
There was one absinthe-laced beer left. Piper downed it all.
Death was still unnatural in those days. I suspect it works a bit different now. But the consequences are the same. After Cain did it, he ran into the desert. I found Abel's body. The rocks carried his blood. But he wasn't lifeless, not like nowadays. The rocks with his blood, I can't describe it. I don't know how to describe it. They shimmered. Their crevices undulated, as if speaking. This was Abel's will. His presence on the rocks. He was dead. But his spirit endured. I began to understand that day. I understood better years later. We'd built a home for ourselves. I sired many more children. We tried our best to fill our life with laughter and discipline. Our natural-born children were not going to be like my firstborn, the product of my full imagination. We were not going to bring any more shining men into this world. But one day, years and years after my friend left, years after Abel's blood cried out from the rocks, he returned, the unwelcomed guest. He wore many layers of painted leathers and furs and stitched together in new, strange uniforms. The Shining Man returned to us in our home. He had a proposition to make. He was bigger now. Physically, he looked stronger, more confident, brighter even. My world was dull. His was the tip of a rainbow, brilliant and sublime. More brilliant and more sublime now than when I first created him. I'd gained scars from toiling in the fields, wrinkles from my old age, blotchy skin from striving under the heat of the sun. This child of mine, this shining man, he was better now than ever. What had he done? What artistry had he invented? I don't know how he learned it, the new art. That's his word, by the way, for what he does. He calls it art. Or at least that's a fair translation. I can't remember the old words, but I can feel when we get the translation right. You know how many times I've told this story? Once a year. Every year. Always to some stranger. Just to know the narrative is out there. That brings comfort to my old frame. I'm not sure why. How many languages have I told this very story in? 15? 20? Probably more. I've forgotten so much. But no matter the times or the age, the memory of this remains. He had made an identity catcher. He learned that when a creature dies, little or big, its essence, soul, if you will. Though soul is actually a separate thing, but for you to understand, soul works fine. This stuff flies out of our body and rejoins its ruler. Who is the ruler, you ask? The one that has dominion over you. I didn't understand that back then, when I walked with my friend. He was setting my creatures free from their dominion. Free. They could choose their ruler. We all choose. There's no alternative. Somehow the Shining Man had found a way to link action to dominion. Cain died and went to the Shining Man. He ate my boy. My boy gave him strength. He's the eater of souls, the displacer of truth. He is evil. He's evil. He is what evil is, the great stealer of life. You kill a man, you're making a pact. You may not know it. You kill a man, your soul belongs to the Shining One. You hate your brother, he'll have you for breakfast. You, my drinking buddy, worship alcohol. Your addiction proves it. You'll fly to him when your heart beats no more. Addiction is a form of slavery. All slaves go to him. All slaves go to him. You think that's the worst of it? It's not. When he came to us, the unwelcomed guest, he didn't come just to inform us of his great invention. His plan is much more sinister than that. He's eating them for a reason. He swallows them up to gain power. He hates my friend, the one from my walks in the garden. He hates him more than he loves himself. I used to tell the Shining Man everything I learned from my friend, so he wasn't naive. How do you fight the infinite when you are finite? You hide in the shadows until your finiteness is so large that it borders on infinite. It sounds complex, but it's not. My children each have reflections of the infinite in their finite shells. I am a finite representation of my friend from the garden. We are the same, only I don't go on forever. He does. So when I create, I have to give of myself. When he creates, he doesn't lose any power. My children are a gift. Unlike my mental creations, the unicorns and Sasquatch, my children didn't suck any of myself in their birth. Every human child is a piece of the infinite. When they die, they return to the infinite. Unless they are slaves to someone else. So the Shining Man eats my children. Forever, he wants the world to never end. The longer it goes, the more reflections of infinity he possesses. I said no to him. He wanted us to join him in rebellion. I said no. My wife said yes. She joined him. Lilith and the Shining Man. She had her reasons. I can't blame her. My story is not hers. Her identity is now knit into the Shining Man's. Over the centuries, he's gained more power. He's learned new tricks, new skills. His finite pieces of the infinite constantly inform him of new horizons. People are special. So special. They don't even know. Each of us is unique. You are unique.
The drunkard made no reaction as he remained steadfastly asleep.
You hold in yourself a piece of the infinite. No one else has that same piece. No one. I can see a piece of my friend that went on walks with me in you. It's unbelievable. It's beautiful. But then that son of a bitch steals it from you. He abhors you. Many think I'm evil, that I want people to die. That's ludicrous. I know your value better than you do. I don't want you to die. I want you to thrive. But the longer you live, the better your chances are that you'll fall into slavery. That's a fate worse than death. So yes, I'll kill the whole world so that he'll stop eating us. That's the only way to win. The world has to end. Maybe then, when I stop the Shining Man, my friend will return to me. Maybe he'll forgive me. I want to go back. I have to go back. You could come too. You are beautiful.
A piece of slobber dripped down from the corner of the drunkard's mouth.
The game's gone on for far too long. The Shining Man is always using new tactics. Ghosts, werewolves, leprechauns, vampires, they are all from one of two families. Some of them, the Frost Giants, the Catwoman, they are my creation. They are creatures caught between two wars. Most of them try to stay on the sidelines, try not to be seen. Some of them join forces with the Shining Man. Still, a few found their way through the door 1,000 years ago. I don't know why, but a way out of this universe appeared some time ago. Ziz flew through it, and took with it many creatures. Some people, too, went through. That's what the Crusades were really about. But that's another story. You see, the Shining Man makes demons out of us, like skinned people. When you die a slave to him, your identity comes to his footstool. Many, then, before more than now, are given a choice. You can be eaten by him, become one with his grand ego, or two, return to Earth as a perverse creature. All of the horror stories of nightmares doing unforgivable things, these are the brought back souls of dead humans, enslaved by the Shining Man. He learned that the stories of werewolves turn people to think and dwell on dark things. When you start imagining a werewolf ripping out your jugular, you start to think that this world is really a dog-eat-dog kind of place. So maybe instead of working with your brothers and sisters, you should seek to destroy them. That was the strategy. I've had my own strategies. Some worked okay, but mostly I failed. You know that's true, because we're still here, living under the powers of the Prince of the Air. When my friend left me, when he banished me from his garden place, he told me one more thing. He was taking away my authority. He'd given the whole world into my custody. I was supposed to be the custodian of this whole thing. He took my dominion away. He distributed to three creatures. The birds of the air he gave to an immortal creature, Ziz. The beasts of the fields and the plains, Behemoth. Lastly, he made Leviathan. Then he whispered to me, when the story is over, Leviathan would come to finish it. That's what he said to me. Once upon a time, I hunted the Leviathan. Wondered what her role truly was. Now, in this late hour, I understand. I've prodded her for years, but soon she will awake. Soon. Soon. She'll come. Swallow us all up, and the Shining Man will lose.
A quote from Errol Morris, famous documentarian in the same Chuck Klosterman book, Eating the Dinosaur, goes as follows. Quote, "The deeper question is, what's more important, narrative consistency or truth? I think we're always trying to create a consistent narrative for ourselves, and I think truth always takes a backseat to narrative. Truth has to sit in the back of the bus." This is Dante Stack, creator of Solve the World. Thank you for listening to this penultimate episode of Part 3 of Solve the World. Next week, indeed, we will bring you the ultimate episode of Part 3, Episode 80, The End of All Things. This episode's been a long, long time coming for me. I'm really excited to give it to you. I hope you enjoyed it. Stay tuned for next week, alright guys? If you want, you've gone with me this far in the journey. Do me a favor, write a review on iTunes. I know a lot of you don't use iTunes, but even if you don't, if you just want a way to give back,
but don't have any money, writing a review would be really helpful. Haven't gotten any for a couple months, so I could use that push on iTunes this week in particular. Thank you, guys. All music and sound effects are appropriately attributed on our show notes page at DanteStack.com. Thanks. See you next week for the season finale, we'll call it. Bye.